sound check?
Yes. So you say something too, and then we'll...
Okay, this is a sound check.
Okay. And we'll start an interview with Judy Barlow on March 20th, 1997. Judy's going to talk about the few things she can remember about the history of the of women's studies at SUNY Albany. How did you, you know, what was your first experience with the women's studies program? How did you get involved?
Well, I'm not, what's interesting is I'm not exactly sure even when the program itself started. I sort of landed in among the people who were involved in starting it in a very odd way. I was a graduate student at University of Pennsylvania when I got the job here, and I heard from, I hate to say a mutual friend because actually it wasn't, but anyway, someone we knew in common, I heard that Judy Federley had gotten a job here too, and I had never met Judy Federley, because she was a junior faculty and I was a graduate student, and they never let those two together. But I called her, and she invited me to come up with her when she was coming up house hunting. And so I drove up here with her. I was apartment hunting, and that would have been in April maybe of 73, maybe it was May of 73. And she was staying at Gloria DeSole's house, because she had met Gloria DeSole at a conference or something. And so very kindly, which I thought was really quite incredible, Gloria invited me to stay at her house, even though neither she nor Judy knew me. And one night when we were there, Gloria had a party for all the women, I guess, in the, I'd never seen so many women together in one place in my life. And so that's how I got to know the women who were, I remember Joan was there, and obviously Judy was there, so that's how I got to know most of the women who were involved in women's studies even before I ever got here.
Wow. So did they then call on you, or I mean, so then once you got here, what happened?
That I don't remember very well. I do know, well, you know, it was my first job, and certainly I was not teaching any women's studies courses at the time, and I don't, if there were, whatever women's studies was going on, I don't think it was institutionalized in any way. I think the first women's studies courses were probably being taught around then, and, but I do remember running into various of the people that I had met at that party, and I remember particularly Joan. When not long after I got, I guess I had not impressed Joan when she met me at the party, which is probably true, because I remember telling her I had gone car shopping shortly after I got here. I didn't own a car, and that how angry I was that I had taken a friend of mine from Philadelphia with me, and every time I asked a question, the car salesman would answer my friend, and my friend actually knew less about cars than I did. He didn't know a hubcap from a carburetor. And I remember telling the story how angry I was, and I finally bought the car from the one guy who would talk to me. And Joan said, gee, maybe that'll turn you into a feminist. So obviously I certainly did not consider myself a feminist at that at that point. And obviously Joan was very carefully pointing that out to me.
Did you teach courses for the program in its early years, or when do you recall beginning to teach courses?
That's again very hard to say. I mean, I remember when people started, when the collective, I think I'm remembering, when the collective was just getting started. And I knew about that, and I knew what was going on, but I was not involved. So I guess, and I could be remembering wrong, but my suspicion is that when I started, and it would have been in, I got here in 73, and it would have been probably in the late 70s, or the mid to late 70s, when I started teaching a women playwrights course. We had a slot in the English department for a women writers course, and I decided, might have been about 76, 77, that I would like to teach women playwrights. And I really got interested in that. And that course was cross-listed with women's studies. But it was actually the only core course. And it, well, actually not, probably a year or so later than that. And again, I'm very fuzzy on dates. I was asked to be one of the instructors of record for intro. So I was an instructor of record for intro for two or three times, I think, before I got involved in the collective. Mm-hmm. So by that point, I was involved in women's studies as the in, as the program.
What about the other people? I mean, I'm interviewing a lot of people, and of course there's going to be a lot of repetition, mm-hmm. but who are the people you remember? Particularly, of course, the ones who are no longer here, because I'd like to be able to identify some of the people who were active and have since moved on.
Okay, well, as I said, I guess probably Judy Federle and Joan Schultz, in part because they were also in my department, mm-hmm. so that I saw them in both contexts. And I guess most of the people who are still involved, mm-hmm. Imbani came a good deal later, and it was Chris Bose and Iris Berger. Mm-hmm. I remember them as chairing the department,
yeah, right.
And I remember, in fact, I think being involved in hiring them to mm-hmm. chair the department. I do remember being involved in that, and obviously, I remember you, because we've served on a lot of committees
right.
together.
Right.
And as you said, Glenna as well. And those are probably the main people. I know there are some people who have since left. I don't remember them terribly well.
Mm-hmm.
There seems to have been a fairly stable group since that
yeah.
point. Diva was involved at an early stage, and I don't remember at what point, Diva Dames,
mm-hmm.
I don't remember at what point she developed some disagreements with certain members of the department and
mm-hmm.
the program and went her own way,
mm-hmm.
but I do remember Diva being involved fairly early on, too.
Okay. What about students?
Of course, Francine Frank was
right.
also involved.
What about students? Do you remember, are there any students, women's studies students, who stand out in your mind from the early days or even from the later days?
Well...
And why, you know, what is it about them?
I'm probably not going to remember terribly much many of the names. I still remember, I can still see the classroom that I taught the first women writers class in, my first, and it was a fairly small class. Nobody had heard much about the particular writers. And I was fairly terrified and trying to, you know, approach it fairly modestly, as it were. And I remember that there were some students in there who were much stronger feminists than I was at that
mm-hmm.
point.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one, I think her name was Germaine, something like that. And I remember because she, whenever she wrote her exam, she always used the symbol for woman instead of writing out the word. She was the first student I had who did that. And I remember she was quite helpful in there. And later, Stacy Young, yeah, who went on to, I think she went on to Cornell to study history. I had her in a very early class. I think I had her when she was a freshman, and I was very impressed with her intelligence and her command of feminism. And Gordon's going to see his last name. I can't remember at the moment, although I can see her face very well, who went on to start the Empowerment Project.
Oh, yes.
And she had been in several courses with me, and I thought she was just terrific. And she was also involved with the program and went on with that. And I guess beyond those, probably the students I remember most are the students that I work with in either intro or collective. Mm-hmm. The first time I did intro, and I will not remember the names of either of those, it was a very different experience each time I did it. And so I remember the students very well, even if I don't remember their names.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What were the differences?
Well, the first time I taught it, the students were prepared, but not as prepared as they might have been, and I guess they were very gung-ho, and there happened to be some students in the class, one of whom I think was simply emotionally disturbed, who was disruptive at times. There was also an Arab student in the class. Mm-hmm. And who I think, you know, who came to talk to me several times because she was very interested in the material, but she was also rather scared about some of the things that we were talking about. And at one point, the class had voted to involve themselves in a gay rights protest. And I suggested that maybe, because we weren't going to go, they had said we weren't going to go unless everybody agreed. Mm. And I said maybe we ought to hold a secret ballot instead of a public one, and a couple of people voted no, and the facilitators got very angry at the class, and I remember afterwards having to explain to them that this Arab student had mentioned, she came from a religious Muslim family, that she said if there were a photographer there and my family ever found out, I'd be out of the university and out of the country in a minute, and that, you know, they were very young, and it was very hard for them to understand somebody's world could be that different from the world they experienced. So that was quite different. The second time, I think the facilitators were very good, and they were very competent, and we had one extremely disruptive guy in there who just thought, who obviously had taken the course to tell everybody what to do, correct all their misconceptions, and who dominated the conversation and wouldn't shut up. And they were much better at keeping their temper. And not that I threw them out the window as I was tempted to do, but it really, really annoyed me because he said some very offensive things. And then the third time I did it with two students actually that I became quite friendly with. One was Amy Doyle. And the other one, whose name is on the tip of my tongue, is probably going to show up in 10 or 15 minutes.
Then you'll remember her name.
Then I remember her name right. And she went on to law school. Mm-hmm. And I keep wanting to say Michelle, but it's not Michelle.
Margaret Clemens?
No.
She's the one that I remember going on to law school.
Yeah, well, a lot of our students went on to law school. And that was a really nice group. Was that the year that I was also doing collective? Mm-hmm. And so it was very interesting. They were experienced, and I learned a lot from the intro classes. I learned a lot from them, and they were, I missed them. I mean, I probably shouldn't say that on tape because
someone will be knocking
at
your door.
When I finally did collective, it was the kind of thing where, you know, it had been, I can't remember, I think I did it in 78. I think that's what it was. And, you know, for a long time people have been saying, I think it's your turn to do collective. And at the same time people would tell me about collective meetings that went on till 2, 3 in the morning, and I'm not a late person. And so I kept ducking it one way or another, and finally the time came and I couldn't duck it anymore. And it was really a fabulous experience. Up until about a year or so ago, I was still in touch with some of the students in the collective. And I think there were problems in the collective. There were certainly some students who were, it was very funny to watch, because during the first semester, when it was the collective meeting, Sue Schapperzak and I were the authority figures. Mm-hmm. So that they were, you know, if we asked them to write papers, there were a couple would say, well, I don't have to do this. And they would give us great trouble. And then the second semester, when they had their own intro classes, they'd come and complain, students won't do their papers. And we'd say, well, now you know how it feels. So it was a lot of fun to watch them look at it from the other perspective. I'm firmly convinced that that collective would not have worked nearly as well had Sue not been there. Mm-hmm. Sue was fabulous with the group. She had a lot of experience. Nothing ever seemed to rattle her. maybe it did, but she certainly never showed it. Mm-hmm. So with two of us, it made it a lot easier. And also, as I said, since she tended to be a lot less volatile than I was at the time, she said, don't worry, I've seen this happen before. They'll work it out in their own way.
Mm-hmm. As you think back on the development or the evolution of the program and then later on the department, can you remember any issues? I mean, of course there were issues that came up. Are there any that stick out in your mind that we need to record for history so that people can think about that and look back upon it?
Well, there were always a lot of issues at various different times. Some of them were obviously personal issues, mm-hmm. some of which are still going on.
Yeah.
There were always all kinds of questions in terms of, I mean, even something like setting up the collective and intro, which was a very chancy thing to do. I mean, to have a class basically run by undergraduates, with the undergraduates essentially giving the grades, went against everything that the university expected us to be doing, and you know, I was always looking over my shoulder waiting for them to say, you can't do that.
Right.
So that was always an issue. I remember the internship took a long, long time when it was first put in, that those debates seem to have got, I don't think there's any member of the committee who, and then member of the department who was not a member of the internship committee at some point.
Okay.
And that went on for a very long time about how we would link what they were doing in the internship with their academic work, how we would make sure that they weren't just pushing papers, whether or not they had to work in feminist organizations,
mm-hmm.
or could they learn how to be a feminist in a government organization that wasn't particularly sympathetic to women. And some of us thought, and I was one of them, that, yeah, that would be very good training,
right.
to learn how to be a feminist in a hostile environment. Mm-hmm. But other people really wanted them to be in feminist organizations. And so that was, I remember, a big
mm-hmm.
issue.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, in terms of, you know, turning into a department and what that meant in terms of our resources.
Mm-hmm.
And there have always been some tensions, I think, between, because we are put together in such an odd way, that some people are core faculty and some people are joint faculty, and some people think that they're being asked to do too much, and other people feel that they're being asked to do too much. I mean, I think that's true in any department, but I think it's particularly difficult in our situation when so many of us have our feet elsewhere.
Right.
And of course, one of the problems that's, I mean, it was not a problem for women's studies to discuss, but I think a serious problem now is, of course, as the resources are getting smaller, those of us who have primary appointments in other departments, they don't want to let us out.
Right.
So I can't imagine my department letting me teach a core women's studies course.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't even given me the women writers course in a couple of years.
Yeah.
So that, you know, always became an issue. And obviously, most recently, the issues have been about possibility. Do we start making alliances with other departments in fear that we will have to combine,
mm-hmm.
or do we hang on to what we are? Do we hang on to our independence? And obviously, that has been a very central issue. There have also always been, I think, racial issues going on, either on the surface or underneath, that our representation has not been very big among women of color, certainly in terms of the faculty, and how to increase the participation of women of color, which is, in this university, obviously not an easy thing to do.
Yeah.
And I think that has always been, like I said, either on the surface or underneath
mm-hmm.
an issue, as well as it should be.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I had a question which came and then went.
We'll come back.
Yes, I know, but only when you're lying in bed at night, thinking, oh, I should have asked her that. Are there people or groups on the outside of women's studies that you would characterize or consider to be supporters or people who have really helped us? And are there any that you might care to discuss who perhaps have not been helpful and have, you know, who are non-supporters, active non-supporters, I mean?
Yeah, I think it has varied, obviously, from president to president. Mm-hmm. I think some of the administrators have simply let us be because it's easier for them to do that than not. Mm-hmm. Some have obviously been more supportive. And it's hard to, you know, it comes and goes, and it also depends on the political changes. Mm-hmm. Somebody who is supporting us, obviously some of the women who have been in administrative positions have been particularly supportive, but that's not always been the case. Mm-hmm. And I wish it were. Mm-hmm. I wish I could say it had been, but it is. That's mm-hmm. not necessarily mm-hmm. the case. And I think, obviously, I mean, the obvious one is the Affirmative Action Office and Gloria DeSalle,
yes,
that has always been a very strong supporter. And of course, since Gloria has such good connections with the administration, has always been good at telling us, you know, sort of where to play and what to play.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, it varies enormously. And some people who may have meant well may not have helped us in ways. Mm-hmm. Ways that they might have.
Yeah. Do you think that there is a change, or what changes do you see as a result of the change from program to department?
Well, I think it makes us stronger.
Mm-hmm.
I think it makes us stronger, and I know. You know, do you know when the change? When the change went over?
Well, I'm as fuzzy as you are. You know, it was. I would say it was around in the beginning of this decade.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure.
Early 90s. Yeah. I mean, I think it made us, once we were a department, it gave us a bigger voice in governance.
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly gave me a bigger sense of pride to be able, when I went to national meetings, and
mm-hmm.
sometimes it was National Women's Studies Association, or it would be Modern Language Association, or Association of Theater and Higher Education, to say that I was from a department.
Mm-hmm.
And that we were flourishing, which I think we were and are,
mm-hmm.
that we were in many ways models for other departments, and that was the point at which, you know, programs come and go, and programs always seem to be something borrowed and something begged,
mm-hmm.
and that once you are a department, you're standing somewhere mm-hmm. as an entity yourself.
Yeah.
And so I think it did make a big difference, not just logistically in terms of majors, but also in the way we were perceived.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I haven't asked other people the sky blue sky, you know, predict the future, so I don't think I'll ask that. How would you characterize the program/department over the years, if you can?
Yeah, I'm not sure I can. I think it is taking on, the emphasis now seems to be a more international emphasis, and I think that's very good. Obviously the grant that we've gotten, obviously the fact that the chair is interested in women's studies and women's roles in other countries is moving us in that direction, as is the connection with LACS. And I think that's very exciting, particularly mm-hmm. for me, even if I feel, even if I'm likely to be left a little bit behind, since I am an Americanist.
Right.
I have been participating in some of the seminars and some of the workshops,
mm-hmm.
and it is very exciting to me. And I think it's a sort of natural progression of what's been going on in women's studies. It took us a while to discover the women in our own country.
Right.
And now we're actually discovering, my God, there's a whole world of them. And I think that's very exciting. So I think that's one definite trend that we've been seeing. I think women's studies is, I mean, I just had a student in here a minute ago who has taken several women's studies courses and who is interested. She's not a women's studies major or a minor, mm-hmm. but that it's no longer odd to see a student who takes a couple of courses in women's studies just the way she would take a couple of courses in French or whatever. Mm-hmm. That it is no longer the fringe, but that it is a part of a well-rounded liberal education and all the... Those were quotation marks, not just that all the things that that means.
Yeah.
And that strikes me as very exciting. Now, I don't think, I mean, women's studies in part exists because the university as a whole is men's studies. Yeah. And I don't know at what point that will change or if it all, you know, mm-hmm. that's obviously one of the central issues. Do we mainstream ourselves out of existence?
Mm-hmm.
I guess I don't worry about that because it's not likely to happen in my lifetime.
Right.
So, but I do think, in fact, that that is a future issue. Now, since I haven't done intro and or collective for a decade now, really, it's very difficult for me to say what the students are like now. I mean, I get them in my women writers courses. I think there may be less of a political commitment than there was. Mm-hmm. Some of the, not backlash, but some of the feeling that the battles have been fought or that the battles are elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not nearly as convinced of that as other people are. I mean, I don't mm-hmm. think feminism is dead, and I think these students are aware that it's still not a level playing
mm-hmm.
field. If it were, I wouldn't be using a male metaphor like a liberal plea.
Right.
Yeah. So, as I said, it's we've become more mainstream. Obviously, some of our courses are accepted for general education credit.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that itself was a big battle.
Mm-hmm.
If you make it available for general ed credit, that means that you get some students who aren't particularly interested in women's studies, but who just want the credit. On the other hand, it also means that you actually may get access to students who normally wouldn't be there.
Right.
And that strikes me as very appealing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that has helped, that in the university's commitment, strong or weak, whichever way you want to characterize it, to diversity,
mm-hmm.
that we are part of that, but that also we are looking to issues of diversity within the department, as well as the department representing a diverse segment of the university.
Mm-hmm.
One of many segments.
Well, do you have anything more you want to add?
Yeah, actually I do. And I'm not sure that this I'm not sure how this would help a history, but I want to put it in there anyway,
mm-hmm.
which is that if it were not for women's studies, I wouldn't be here. And I did not come here to do women's studies. I didn't know anything about women's studies. I came from a graduate school where I had a grand total of 2 women teachers and during my entire graduate career, one of whom was on loan for the summer. And the idea of, you know, women as faculty was fairly daring to me, even though I was going to become one of them. I mean that in a very literal sense. When I came up for tenure, it was a tight battle. I had not published as much as some people would have liked.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I would have gotten tenure had I not had very strong support from women's studies and, quite frankly, I think the university decided it would have been more trouble to get rid of me than to keep me.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that came because there was a vote in women's studies and very strong support from there. I had support also from the theater department, but not nearly the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the kind of research I do, I did my first book on O'Neill. Well, I was working on O'Neill, actually, when I published my first anthology of women playwrights, and I put that together for the women writers course because there was no text to use in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've since gone on to do a second edition of that and a second book. And that's probably given me the most satisfaction of anything I've done. And I was at a conference at the Women's Project a couple of months ago, and I was talking to someone, a woman named Helen Chinnell, Chinoy. And Helen is, I don't know, maybe 70. You know, she's a good bit older. And she said, because she was one of the people who had inspired me, she had come out with a book on women in drama that she edited. And she said, I guess we are sort of the old guard. I guess we started this. And, you know, at the same time, I was like, no, I'm still young. That the books are being used in a lot of courses, that there are courses in women playwrights that didn't exist before that. And I'm not taking credit. I mean, I didn't start something. I came in on something that had already been started. But had I not had the models here and the support here, I wouldn't have done that. And what I would have done when I burnt out on the particular male writers I was working on, I honestly don't know. So that in both an intellectual sense and in a practical sense, women's studies, I'm here because of women's studies. And whether women's studies wants to claim credit or blame for that, there's that's the way it is, yeah. And so I feel a strong commitment to women's studies. Mm-hmm. And I very, very strong, as I said, it worries me very much when there are institutional pressures to knock us back either to a program or to combine with others. Not that I don't think we shouldn't forge very strong links with others, but that I think we play a very important role.
Yeah.